There you go.
Yep.
Okay. Good afternoon. I'll call to order the meeting of the State Government Budget Division for March 18, 2009. Today's agenda is partially the agenda that we would have had from last Monday, but the floor session went on, so we canceled it. So later on, we're going to be looking at the governor's budget proposals for the state government budget. We had also scheduled for today's agenda looking at Minnesota Management and Budget, or Department of Finance, looking at their part of the budget. We had not previously looked at them yet, and so we wanted to hold off until after the governor's budget proposals were made, which were done yesterday, so that we would give them an opportunity to come in and look at their area of the budget. So we have a few members of the department here. I guess if they would please come forward to the table. Welcome back to the budget division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Stephanie Andrews, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Finance, hopefully soon to be renamed Minnesota Management and Budget. In your packets, you should have a series of slides that I'm going to be working from. And I'm going to do some basic introductory slides here, and then the assistant commissioners will join me to talk about their specific initiatives. We are going to do a shortened presentation on MAPS since we've already gone over that proposal to some extent, but I'll refer to a couple things that we think are worth coming back to. On the first slide there, just the general view of how Minnesota Management and Budget, the general funds, are spent in the agency. One of the key things probably to point out there is that you'll see their employee insurance at 0%, one of the largest as you look at your budget documents, over $500 million, but those are insurance funds. And in terms of general fund, the employee insurance division is not supported at all by general funds. Just in terms of trends over for the agency, since the year 2000, our general fund appropriations have been cut by about 24%. You also will remember that our base was cut as part of the merger. When Employee Relations and Finance merged, there was a reduction of, I think, $550,000 to reflect merger savings. And we also, at the same time, had language in law that expires this July that prohibited us from laying off any employees as a result of the merger. So that has been something of a challenge to manage those two things, both the base cut and the inability to lay off any employees, although we, through attrition, have been able, I think, to reorganize many of our units so that we've been able to achieve some important increase in both quality and responsiveness, especially on the information system side. On the next slide, you'll see a picture of all funds spending for Minnesota Management and Budget. And there, again, just to highlight for you the fact that employee insurance funds, when you look at it on an all funds basis, make up 96% of the funds for the agency. But important to remember that those funds are coming from employer and employee contributions. And so we basically hold them to fund our self-financed insurance program. And as you well know, they are not available for spending for any other purpose without incurring significant federal penalties. We have there, you'll see the 1% for systems billing. That's authority that we have in law to operate our statewide accounting, procurement, human resources, payroll systems, and related information access systems. That's about 1% of the funds for Minnesota Management and Budget. The general fund then makes up 3%. That's the slide that you saw before. And then our internal service fund for management analysis and development is about 0.3%. The next chart gives you a picture of staffing for the agency. There are a couple of units in our agency which are highly visible and very small. Economic analysis would be one that I'd highlight. You certainly hear a lot from Dr. Stinson and his economists. That staff of four people makes up only 2% of the staffing of the agency. You also hear a lot from the budget division. You'll be hearing from them later on today. They make up about 8% of the agency's staffing. Treasury, again, a high profile with Assistant Commissioner Cardell and the projects that she works on with the capital budget, 4%. The largest pieces of our agencies, information systems, 20% of our staff involved in maintaining and operating the statewide payroll accounting payroll systems that we talked about before. Accounting services involved, again, in financial management throughout state government, and then employee insurance at 18% of our staffing. The next slide, just again to give you a sense of The trend over time for our agency, you haven't before looked at the combined picture for finance and employee relations, and so just wanted to give you a sense of what's happened over time to this agency. And since the year 2000, there's been a decrease of 30% in staffing down. That's in raw numbers, 119 people since the year 2000. And as you well know, not a decrease in responsibilities through that time. To talk a little bit on the bottom of page 3 in your handout, wanted to highlight for you some of the key information technology projects that our agency has been involved in recently. Before we come to you and talk about the new things, just wanted to look back for a minute. I think that you're aware of the fact that over Labor Day weekend, we completed a major upgrade of the Semaphore system, the payroll and benefits system for the state. We funded that project through savings from a platform change that we'd implemented earlier, and so we're able through that platform change to move Semaphore off of the mainframe and kept the savings in the system billings account, and we're able to fund this upgrade. In an ideal world, that's also where we would be heading with MAPS down the road when we get a replacement project, is to find a way to internally fund those upgrades so that we don't have to keep coming back to you for further investments in those systems. The Semaphore project was very successful, as the upgrades before it have been also completed on time, on budget. That project team has done 3 major version upgrades recently, and even though the system is a 14-year-old system, through those upgrades we've managed to keep that technology up to date, and I think a product that our state stakeholders find very useful and important, clearly, to doing the state's business. The budget information system renewal, we've talked with you about that also. That's, as the hard hat would tell you, under construction. We are working right now on phase 1 of that project, which is preparing a new budget system. That part of the project is the part that produces the governor's budget documents for you. It's the way that agencies organize their work as they're preparing the biennial budget. So basically, the information from the accounting system moves into the budget system, and this provides a new interface for that work. We talked before briefly in this committee about the MAPS project and the budget project and how the two of them interact. And just highlight for you that this budget project really is kind of setting the stage for the MAPS project once we get going, because what it provides is a workplace for agencies to do some scenarios as they're doing their budget planning so that they can look at some what-if situations and also provide an upgraded reporting capability down the road. Phase 2 of the budget information project will update our fiscal note system and our capital budget system. And we have been involved with agencies throughout the BIS project and also working very closely with legislative staff to be sure that we're looking at what upgrades, again, especially in reporting, that they're interested in getting out of that project. And that project was funded with IT carry forward, which you authorized in the last state government appropriations bill. The next project is one that I had hoped to be able to come to you and say was going to be ready in the next day or so, but now we think that the launch of this project is actually a week or two away. We're launching, I think we've talked about this briefly, but we are now ready to launch what we're calling TAP Minnesota, which is a transparency and accountability project, which will carry about 80% of the state's general fund spending, basically everything other than largely payroll, for current and recent years, so that anybody can go online and look in a searchable database to bring up that information. It will provide online instant access to the public, to all of you, to the media, for school payments, local governments payments, contractors, and any other vendors. We're excited to have that. We, again, are looking forward to the chance to show that to you once we get ready to launch. We have been working through the last weeks at resolving some significant accessibility issues that the site had. This technology in itself is fairly new, and as other states have done it, they've run into some issues that we were unwilling to let go before we launched, basically in terms of being sure that people with vision challenges will still be able to access the site. And we think we've resolved those satisfactorily. We hear from the community that they're pleased with what's happened there, and so again, we're looking forward to being able to show that to you soon. The important part of that project, too, is that it establishes an architecture for future additions, so that right now what that website is going to include is vendor information. We expect to continue to add more pieces to that as we go along. And so once you get to see it, we'll be interested in hearing from you about what other pieces you think would be useful and valuable to add to that. Moving on then to the specific budget recommendations that you have in front of you, there were three major recommendations in the governor's budget that he released in January. We have added yesterday another recommendation that you'll be hearing about also on the federal stimulus response. So as you know, the MAPS recommendation, I'll come back to this later in the presentation, but requests $17.95 million in fiscal 10 and 11 for replacement of the MAPS accounting and procurement system. We also have a financial oversight and assistance initiative for $1.4 million. Assistant Commissioner Moe will talk with you some more about that, and Assistant Commissioner Cardell. The federal stimulus response for $1.6 million. Assistant Commissioner and State Budget Director Jim Showalter will talk with you about that, and I'll come back then to talk about the 5% reduction.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the TAP one, was that done in-house or was a vendor doing that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, that was done with a vendor.
Okay. And Mr. Chair.
Senator Olsen.
On the semaphore, when that's upgraded like that, is that just the software or is that new hardware too, or how encompassing is that?
It was Anders.
Mr. Chair, I think Assistant Commissioner Moe is probably better able to respond to that.
Mr. Chairman, sure, Senator Lori Moe, Assistant Commissioner, the semaphore system has had periodic software upgrades, version upgrades. These are improvements in functionality and modernization provided by the software vendor. Additionally, we have done a project to move from a mainframe and DB2 database environment to a Windows Server Oracle database environment. And it was that platform change that resulted in operating savings that permitted the software upgrade that was completed most recently in the fall of 08.
With the nearly $2 billion one-time money that the state is anticipating from federal stimulus, do the systems we have in place, are they going to be able to track? You know, this is going to be quite a challenge coming at us.
Mr. Chair, I think Assistant Commissioner Showalter probably is best able to
okay.
talk about stimulus.
Commissioner, welcome to the Budget Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Jim Showalter, State Budget Director. And, Mr. Chair, if I heard your question correctly, it was whether the roughly $2 billion in federal grants coming through the state system, if we're prepared, are able to handle that. And excellent question and something we actually wanted to get to.
Okay. If that's part of your presentation, you know, we'll get to that part. We'd already talked about some of the accounting. I didn't know if that was part of it or not. So
I'm pleased to say it is part of our presentation.
Okay. Well, maybe we should just let you go through your presentation and
very good.
Cover that as you get to it then. So. Okay, what's next up, then?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Then we'll move on with the slide titled Financial Oversight and
okay.
Assistance. I think it's on the top of your fifth page in your handouts.
Sure.
This initiative is a response to trends that we've been seeing in state agencies. Changing circumstances there include turnover of experienced employees, as well as increased complexity and rapidly changing technical environment. This is something we've discussed with you here before. Earlier, we were here and talked about internal control issues along with the Legislative Auditor's Office and Auditor Nobles. And as we talked about then, we're seeing a need for increased agency support to develop and maintain their systems of internal controls. This budget change item would add 8 staff, 2 in the Treasury area, which Assistant Commissioner Cardell will talk about in a few minutes, and 6 for the internal control support unit referenced on this slide. The goal of the unit would not be to replicate the work currently being done by the legislative auditor. We would not be doing back-end auditing. Rather, the focus of the work would be to expand our front-end education and training role. We would increase our capacity for support and oversight and expand our capacity for individual agency consultation and advice. We would do increased follow-up on OLA findings, develop and provide additional tools to agencies, and identify and share best practices and resources across agencies. Currently, we do some monitoring of OLA findings, but this initiative would allow us to be more active, to participate with agencies in their exit conferences with the auditors to more fully understand the findings as well as their proposed responses to any recommendations. We would be more involved in reviewing plans to determine if the response was adequate, and we would do ongoing follow-up until resolved, including some testing after implementation in limited circumstances where that was warranted. We would also do additional work with the legislative auditor with regular meetings to review their findings, to identify trends and new concerns. We would look to those discussions to identify statewide risks, to head off problems before they become widespread across agencies, evaluate and update policies and procedures to address those areas where necessary, expand our communication on those issues and develop training for agencies, and then monitor progress to measure the effectiveness of our strategy. This initiative would also include training positions, which would offer expanded training on existing policies and procedures as well as updates. It would include training on internal control design and monitoring, as well as risk assessment and the rollout of the code of conduct materials that we've discussed with you earlier. We would also develop and offer tools for agencies to improve their efficiencies in developing control processes, for example, exception reports and other tools. We would also provide increased support for the internal audit offices through a more active role for the existing Internal Audit Advisory Roundtable. This is a group that has representatives from all the agencies that have an internal audit function, and they have there's 10 agencies currently with internal audit functions. They have some skilled folks with a lot of experience and a lot of tools that can be shared as best practices across agencies, even in those agencies that don't have internal audit functions. They've shared resources in the past, and we intend to use those more in the future. I'll answer any questions you have, or I'll turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Cardell to talk about the next slide on the bonding oversight component.
I don't see any questions. Welcome back to the Budget Division, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and members, for the record, my name is Kathy Cardell. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Treasury, which includes the debt management function for the state. On the slide that's entitled Financial Oversight and Assistance, you'll see that there is a bonding oversight initiative that totals $376,000 in the 2010 and 11 biennium. Just for a little bit of context, I'm not sure how knowledgeable this committee is about the staffing on the debt management side of the state, but we have a total of two people. I'm one of them. We are not, both of us, 100% dedicated to debt management, but my colleague, Susan Garola, is primarily debt management related. We manage a portfolio currently of over $4.6 billion of outstanding state general obligation debt. a $244 million revenue bond program for the 911 system improvements, the master lease program for the state, other lease purchase arrangements for the state, plus we have about $2.7 billion of currently authorized but on issue general obligation debt outstanding that will yet to be issued. And also we track the state's credit enhancement program both for schools as well as cities and counties. Just to give you a little bit of a comparison purpose, states with comparable debt portfolios have staffs of approximately 4 to 10 people working on these areas. We are already proposing to reallocate the prior capital budget coordinator position that was located in Mr. Showalter's budget area to this area. But as capital projects are becoming more complex and numerous, and financing programs, just as an aside, I was just at a meeting this morning with the state's bond council on the federal stimulus bonding provisions, which will create quite a task for us moving forward to fully take account and to implement those provisions if we choose to do so. It's become apparent that our staffing levels are not adequate to deal with this. And again, just for my own edification, since I've been in this position for about a year now, I went back and looked at the initial 2008 bonding bill. Again, just to give you some context, the first bill, Chapter 179, there were 191 separate appropriations for either individual capital projects or for capital programs in which there are multiple projects. And we are one of the first line of defenses, along with the agency that receives that appropriation, for addressing questions up front. The proposal is to add two people. The first is an audit position, which is designed to be responsive to the OLA's findings for more oversight on the back end of the completion of capital projects. Currently, we strive to provide most of our guidance up front, either in personal meetings, training for agencies, guidance on the web site for the department. But the OLA would like to see more back-end auditing of projects, and so this person would be designed or selected to help us do periodic program audit or project audits. And it also really is helpful to us to assure that the projects are all completed in accordance with state law as well as our departmental policy. The second position is perhaps more of a junior position designed to assist in the day-to-day management of projects and financing programs. To plan, it's really critical to plan for the staff transition in this area. My colleague, Sue Garola, while she's not planning to retire really soon, she is certainly at the point where we need to start seriously thinking about training and educating someone in this area to assume some of those responsibilities going forward. And just in a broad context, you know, we're trying to offer our unit the ability to continue to preserve the tax-exempt status of the state's bonds, which we try to guarantee when we look at the use of the project funds. But also, we need to be able to provide more ongoing interaction, not only with our own MMB budget and accounting staff, but with the agencies of budget and accounting folks that work with us in implementing these capital projects. Again, that concludes my discussion on that slide.
Okay,
but
so
you mentioned the $2.7 billion that yet to be released on bonds. Could you address maybe why they're not released, or the projects held up, or what's the situation?
Mr. Chair, Senator, as you know, each bonding bill authorizes a certain maximum amount of bonding authority, and the way that we issue bonds is on a cash flow basis as the agencies request funds for individual projects. So we do not, for example, because $985 million of GO bonds were approved in 2008, we don't just go out and sell $985 million of bonds. We survey all state agencies. That's another one of the functions of my area. In advance of the sale, each sale of bonds, and they provide us with cash flow projections of their need for funds for each authorization that they have. So there will always be a lag between the amount of bonds that are authorized and the amount of bonds that have not yet been issued.
Okay, who's next?
Mr. Chair, if I can take it then over from Assistant Commissioner Cardell.
Sure.
My name is Jim Showalter, and on the next page you see the added challenge of federal fiscal stimulus. As the two previous items have suggested, we have believe there's some work to do in making sure that our internal controls, our capacity to manage our bond portfolio, and continue to provide the services that you're expecting. Beyond that, the federal government has given us a huge challenge with the federal stimulus bill. The ARRA, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, is a substantial piece of legislation that everyone is at least somewhat familiar with, but let me just touch upon a couple of points. One is that there's roughly 100 federal grant programs that will be getting roughly $2 billion to be spent in the next couple of years. I had the privilege of being in a meeting just last week with representatives from other states, and one of the clear messages that we got from the federal government was you have to do everything perfectly, that there's going to be an unprecedented level of speed, progress, and, by the way, everything's going to be accountable, and, in fact, more accountable than even normal. That bar is going to be very high, and that was a part of that discussion between the states and the federal government. How on earth can we accomplish that from the place that we're in right now? Minnesota is not unique in having some of its back office functions shrunk or maybe not as robust, and the federal government is not always appreciating that our functions may not be capable of just swallowing significant new responsibilities. The initiative you have in front of you is just included in the governor's supplemental recommendation. It's asking for $1.6 million in additional funding for a two-year period. Actually, we would be asking for the appropriation as soon as possible so that we could start to use some of those funds immediately. To the background on the ARRA, we've been managing that sort of on a makeshift basis with staff within MMB and to an extent with in the coordination role, and certainly with plenty of other staff in other federal agencies trying to address those needs. Moving forward, I think we've got several big challenges of managing the information flow and handling the kinds of reporting that the federal government is expecting of us, making sure that we have the types of accounting and controls in place that the federal government is expecting of us, and somehow keeping things going in a fast pace. What we're looking here is both a systems development funding as well as staffing development over that two-year period on a temporary basis so that we can basically draw as much of the federal money as we possibly can and make sure that we do it in a way that we would expect.
Now, Commissioner, was that proposal part of the governor's request recommendation yesterday? I haven't had a chance to look through it. So,
Yes, Mr. Chair. The details hopefully are being posted any moment now.
Okay.
And this would be one of the items that would be included. I think it was mentioned in the transmittal letter as part of his package. There were a couple of different stimulus related items.
And Commissioner, do you know whether or not the this addresses the concerns also of the state auditor, because the auditor testified yesterday at the Joint Fiscal Planning and Policy Commission meeting that she has some concerns because a lot of the federal stimulus money is going to go to local governments. We don't know if it's going to go through the state agencies, the locals, or straight to them. But either way, the state auditor said that their office is not equipped right now to take on the additional burdens of figuring out where the money is going and whether it's properly being accounted for. And she was concerned about that as well, too. Has that been addressed? Do you know if that's going to be looked at?
Excellent question, Mr. Chairman. That is not necessarily included in this request. It could be.
Sure.
I think the key thing that we have to figure out and are trying to just make sure we've got some flexibility for is responding to the reporting requirements and making sure that we've got some of the internal controls and information out there. We do not have guidance from the federal government as to exactly what they're expecting, how it's to be reported, and don't expect that information until the end of March at the earliest.
Well, apparently the state auditors across the country are quite concerned because there wasn't any money appropriated by the federal government
Right.
You know, for the review by the states, and so I'm sure that the state auditor will bring this to Commissioner Hansen's attention, and at some point, because he's the lead for the stimulus, so I think that at some point, I hope that Commissioner Hansen, the governor, or the state auditor can figure out what they need to request of us in order to properly account for the federal money. So,
Mr. Chair, that's a great idea, and I should just say that this was one of we covered a lot of ground in talking with the OMB and federal agencies last week, but this was one of those very clear points where controllers who were in the audience, state finance and management commissioners in the audience, everyone was recognized that there was a mismatch between the capacity in states and the kinds of expectations and the types of controls that were being expected. While federal government, federal agencies had set-asides built into the bill, there was no corresponding funding for state administrative operations.
And going back to the question I raised earlier, and maybe you're still, to get to it, but when we're talking about the upgrade to the technology to do a better job of transparency accountability, is that also going to be able to monitor the stimulus money? Can we do it now? Can we do it if this new technology is adopted and we got to move rather quickly on accounting for that stimulus money?
Mr. Chair, I don't like the answer, but it depends.
Okay.
I think if it was simply a financial reporting, the framework that Deputy Commissioner Andrews discussed with TAP Minnesota of trying to find ways of using our data, using newer tools to move that into a web-ready environment, much like Senator Rest's bill is asking for. I think that is one way to move that financial data into a reporting environment fairly cheaply, fairly quickly. As you try to make it more complex, that is, ask for new data, ask for new combinations of data, ask for different types of sorts, geographic information, explanation of jobs created, and estimates that go along with that financial data, we don't have that in an accounting system. Now you're starting to talk about a much more complex exercise. And so that's, I think we already are setting up plans for figuring out how to move our accounting data to our website, how to report that out. What I can't tell you right now is how much more related information is being expected.
Do you also anticipate in the long run that it's going to be, I would assume, your agency's responsibility to track all the dollars that go out? Even if you go to local governments, or how much does your agency have to follow? Because the feds are going to be looking for some accountability somewhere, and I assume that you're the first agency they're going to contact.
Again, Mr. Chair, you're right on it. The guidance right now, the U.S. Office of Management and Budget has a couple of key questions, one of which is, will the stimulus activities be aggregated at a state level and then reported up to the federal recovery.gov, or will the information flow through the federal agencies, go to the grantees report back to the federal agencies, and then get aggregated back up at the federal level? That's critical for us. If we're to report what's happening in Minneapolis, for the city of Minneapolis, we don't have any information as to what's happening, what burn grants may have gone to the city of Minneapolis. We will have to create a totally new reporting structure if that, in fact, is what is expected.
Sir, so, did you have a question?
You asked it.
Okay. Well, very good. Okay. Any other questions on this topic? Well, I guess proceed.
Mr. Chair, just continuing on with the presentation, I noted that this is not just an IT request. There are also expectations that we need to get out there and work on the monitoring, the financial controls, and that is part of the ongoing effort, as well as trying to make sure that we coordinate grant applications, make sure that we do as good a job as possible on the competitive grant applications, and essentially maximize the value of the stimulus bill for the state of Minnesota. There is the additional question that you sort of touched on, which is stimulus is broader than the state. Similarly, our coordination efforts are probably going to be broader than the state. It's not just dealing with state agencies. It will be dealing with other units of government, as well as higher education or nonprofits, all of whom one way or another, will be either directly or indirectly receiving some of these funds. We're looking for, as I mentioned, two-year funding, but we would be looking for actually almost carry-back ability so that we could start responding, start preparing a reporting system yet in fiscal 2009. Once we get the OMB guidance, they will be giving us probably 2, maybe 3 months between the time that they tell us what they want and the time that they first expect that data to start showing up at recovery.gov. Fortunately, the first time is not a legal requirement, but 2 months later it will be. So we will be under very tight timelines to pull this together and would hope that we could work with the legislature to get 09 funding for this so that we could move quickly. In some states, they've already put out their RFPs on the street.
Senator Ringbauer.
I guess even your last statement makes me more crazy. How can you put out an RFP if you're telling us you don't even know what you're really putting out an RFP for, and they're going to give you reporting requirements, and we're trying to set up for what we think they might want, but we don't know what they might want? Anybody else having problems trying to follow what we're trying to say they're getting ready for on this?
Commissioner Schroeder?
Mr. Chair, I agree. Senator, when we talked to some of our colleagues who were doing this, we said, really? It's not the best design for an IT project to put an RFP out before you, in fact, know what elements or process you're going to do. Yet, they basically, in their haste, they felt like it was better to start working with vendors who were going to modify their products and start working on those relationships rather than trying to compress the project timeline. I think in our instance and in other states, we're at least wanting to make sure we are addressing the right problem before we apply a solution.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Showalter. So I guess still trying to follow this. So do we anticipate that there'll be vendors out there creating programs that would then fit with what we're doing, and so not each state is going to try to recreate the wheel for this mechanism of whatever reporting and accounting is required?
Mr. Chair, Senator Youngbauer, yeah, the blood is in the water, and the consultants are very well aware of what is going on. We get frequent calls. Other states have got frequent calls, and there are several, many vendors out there who are looking to sell systems, programs, approaches for this reporting.
Okay. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, I should just also note that for your information in the governor's supplemental budget recommendations yesterday, there was an additional $5 million that was just requested for stimulus-related matching funds. I think that comes under the purview of this committee. It would be requested for the contingency account so that the legislature would still have control over the monies. The administration would still have to come to the legislature, identify what matching requirements are necessary, with the amounts, the purposes, but that at least then we would have the wherewithal to obtain the match, respond to the federal grants as they become available. We're still receiving, we are receiving guidances almost on a daily basis from the federal government. So far, we haven't seen many needs for matching requirements, but so far, we haven't seen all the programs, and expect there is a possibility of that, and would recommend setting aside some money for that eventuality.
Yeah, Commissioner, I imagine the funds would probably be carried in this budget area, although they can be applied, you know, anywhere, you know, through whatever budget areas are. But you got to house it somewhere, and so this is probably as logical as any. So, yeah, Commissioner Jungbauer.
Maybe it was quite a pay increase there. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Showalter. On the matching funds, then, so the legislation on the stimulus package, the programs that I've seen didn't have a matching component, but that didn't play all the way through. So we don't know what programs do and don't. Is that what I'm following?
They're all over the place. Some of it just money straight to us. Some of it is requires a match. I don't know, Commissioner. Some are things that we have to compete with other states for. Some is just coming to us. There's a lot of categories here, Commissioner.
No, Mr. Chair, Senator, that is exactly right. A brief commercial, a 179-page document, a very fine read. It describes our initial take, and that is state agencies' initial take on what is included in the stimulus bill. We're already seeing our congressional delegation recopy or repackage it and create new guides. It's actually very useful information. But even from that early take, there's plenty of places where we're not sure where it's a competitive process, if there might be some state matching requirements, if it's an in-kind. Or those things aren't always defined at this point in time. Many instances they are not. There's also competitive grants, which is probably the bigger issue. Those are totally new programs that haven't been designed other than perhaps a few bits of verbiage in the bill. The federal agencies now have to figure out, well, on what basis are they going to allocate money? And there's quite possibly matching funds included in that. Health information technology is one that we already know there will be a matching requirement. We expect there will be others.
There's like five broad categories. It's education, human services, transportation, economic development. I forget the last one. And then each broad category has a number of subcategories, the most being within education, human services. I think education alone has like 15 different subcategories. Some are competitive grants that you have to compete with other states for. Some are outright money to the state. Some are the matching. There's a lot of stuff in there. Senator Jungbauer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Showalter, or Mr. Chair, for those of us that are having problems sleeping at night, is there chance of getting these documents that we can try to digest some of this? What I've seen so far, I said, just doesn't get to any level of detail that I'm interested in trying to understand.
Yes, Senator Jungbauer, it's available. I mean, the Commission on Planning Fiscal Policy was given copies, I think, just yesterday, and it's from the agency, and I think that there's copies around if you want to see them. As I say, it's a lot of reading, and it's basically each page is just, a separate category of funding. It just describes the little we know about it. And I mean, Commissioner, could you just randomly pick a page or two and just tell us, kind of what, give us a flavor for what it says? I mean, just...
Mr. Chair, I just say this document is all on our website, so yeah. MMB.
Okay.
WWMMB. State Ministry. Which is our website?
Education, for instance, has Head Start. It's got some Head Start fundings in there.
We've broken it up by funding area: education, health, and human services. Stop me where I'm. Energy and environment, labor and housing, as well as transportation and public safety. Randomly on page 73 starts one from the Department of Commerce, Office of Energy Security, the Weatherization Assistance Program, lead agency contact, type of funding, amount estimated in this instance is $135 million, how this program might work or is expected to work, next steps, whether it's in federal, the government, or in state things, are there any legislative changes necessary, issues and concerns that are relevant.
It's just...
Now, this one example. 170
pages of stuff like that.
Yep. And now it's a nice two-page summary on the weatherization program. We will provide more and new information as we're aggregating our federal funds requests. That's sort of the next stop for these requests. That's a formal application to the legislature notifying you that the state agency expects to apply for and receive federal funds and ask for the authority to spend them. With that notification, there's a 20-day review process that's invoked under current law, assuming that we meet all the timelines. And then once that 20-day review process is completed, committees can either decide to approve, not act, is the same as approval, or take some action to make sure that it remains for further discussion.
Senator Jungbauer, Mr. Wolf was there at the meeting yesterday. Senator Senjum, Senator General Olson, Senator Frederickson, they're on it. So I think there's probably copies of it, within easy reach of your office area. Senator Jungbauer?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And why it becomes important is a number of programs that the state does require a match currently that don't require a match under the stimulus. We're trying to get some legislation through to eliminate that state requirement for the match. And so there's so many bills floating around here I know that really need to be kind of matched up with some of those pages. And we're kind of mid-March here, committee deadlines, things like that.
We're just getting the information out. It's program by program. Some require a match, some don't. And so we got to figure out what's where. And you're right, the time, you know, the time is going quick. And if we don't use it, we lose it. So we have to figure that very, very quickly. And I think, you know, the agency is working as fast as it can to process that and get it to us. So,
Mr. Chair, I just say we have minimized edits and anything to this, trying to just sort of shorten the pipeline as fast as possible. This was delivered to the LCPFP about 2 weeks ago. We're working on the federal funds requests. Expect those to be coming to the legislature ASAP as well. We're trying to get as specific information as possible because it is obviously a difficult task to try and understand and decide the budgets for these agencies. Matching requirements. If you want an overview document on stimulus, one other, this isn't an advertisement because we don't have anything to do with it, but the Council of State Governments has a site called www.staterecovery.org. Very, very handy guide for state and local governments. It's there.
Okay. Go ahead.
With that, then, I think we'll turn it back over to Deputy Commissioner Andrews.
Commissioner Andrews, welcome back.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to go ahead now with the less interesting part of the presentation, and I think we're going to move pretty quickly because I know that you have other things that you want to get to. I'm on the top of, I think, page 7 in your handouts. Just want to briefly go over the 5% operating reduction for the department. We achieved that reduction by eliminating 8 positions. These basically took the positions that we eliminated for the unallotment in fiscal 2009 and carried them forward into 10 and 11, along with then some fairly significant administrative reductions for the agency. One of the things that we're currently doing in fiscal 2009 is using a fair amount of money that we had squirreled away in 2008 by keeping positions open and otherwise minimizing any other non-salary costs that we could. We ended up building up some carry forward so that we could put some money into redoing our space as we merged on with employee relations and finance and now management analysis also. Those agencies basically used to take up 2 floors. When we're done with our reorganization, we'll basically be in about 1.5 floors, and that savings ends up saving us several $100,000 a year. So with the one-time investment that we're doing in fiscal 2009, we'll be able in 10 and 11 to reduce our base costs by a significant amount of money. We're also looking at some basic IT changes, consolidating servers and things that, again, have some ongoing one-time costs in 2009 that have ongoing savings in 10 and 11, and have also made some permanent reductions in employee development and training, are trying to look more carefully at how we put those plans in place at the beginning of the year so that we can still get the training that people need. We were in the circumstance where many agencies are that at the end of the year end up with money that goes unused in employee development and training accounts and instead are trying to budget that up front so that we can make sure we're using it as well as we can.
You know, last 2 years when we had the Doer merger, which a lot of their functions went into your agency, not all, but many of them, you know, we were basically told that, well, there's going to be only one position eliminated, and that was the Commissioner of Doer. We've gone through this reduction here and so forth. Were any of those Doer positions eliminated finally as a result of the merger, or are these other areas that got cut?
Mr. Chair, the base reduction that we ended up taking directly tied to the merger ended up largely covering the commissioner's salary, the legislative liaison, and the commissioner's assistant. And so those were the positions, unclassified positions, that we were able to reduce. There was language, as you remember, in the merger bill that prohibited any reductions due to the merger for staff. And so we haven't been able, nor have we, given that language, pursued eliminating positions straight out because of that. That being said, our agency, these 8 positions and others, has been constantly looking at, given the merger and given just the state of the world, how can we better do what we're doing and in what places can we reorganize? As an example, our information systems group, a fairly very significant part of our agency, about 1/5 of the agency's staffing. Again, these are the people that operate and maintain the state's accounting, procurement, payroll systems. That group, basically, obviously, when we merged, we had 2 CIOs. We certainly have enough work for two high-level technical people, but we pretty quickly, actually about a year ahead of the formal merger date, integrated the IS staff of Doer and Finance into a single staff with a single CIO, moved the other CIO into a chief technology officer position with different responsibilities. And so, again, have looked at places where we had some duplication and changed those. One of our CIOs has, or former CIOs has since left, and so we have a fairly streamlined organization. But, again, even with the prohibition in law against layoffs related to the merger, we've looked where we can at ways to better use the staff that we had.
Okay. Sir Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Andrews, I don't quite understand your structural flow chart of the administration, because I see like deputy commissioner, assistant commissioner. Are there first assistant commissioners and first deputy assistant commissioners? I mean, it seems now I'm hearing a CIO, a CTO. It seems like there's a lot of, you know, almost like calling everybody a vice president kind of a thing. Maybe someday I'd like to see a flowchart of that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I'd be happy to provide that to you. Basically, our organization is fairly straightforward. We have a commissioner, obviously. I'm the deputy commissioner. My job is to deal with the operational pieces of it and also to help the commissioner with kind of ongoing work with the other assistant commissioners in their divisions. We have five assistant commissioners. You've seen largely all of them here today, other than the state labor negotiator, Paul Larson, and also the state economist. And so those are, again, with our enterprise responsibilities, we have an assistant commissioner over accounting, Ms. Moe, over treasury, Ms. Cardell, the state budget director, state labor negotiator, and then our state economist, and I hope I'm not forgetting anybody. But that's basically the senior staff of the agency. Under me, there's the information systems group, and that our CIO heads that up. All agencies have CIOs, and again, we coordinate the activity of that division of about 60 people under that CIO. But I'll be happy to provide you a specific org chart, too.
We kept Commissioner Larson up late last night with the pension commission.
Yes, I'm sure you did, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Okay. Anything further on this part? Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, they reminded me that I forgot Assistant Commissioner Judy Plant, who heads up our Human Resources Management.
And is also
and luckily she's not here, so that I hopefully I'll not share with her that I forgot her.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, going on to the MAPS proposal, if there aren't any other questions, you have heard much about this, and so I only want to hit the highlights and take any questions if you have them. The proposal, as you know, is to replace our current accounting and procurement system. Again, you know that MAPS is central to all state activities. All dollars flow through that system in some way or another. And the system is obsolete at this point in time. We bid for it in 1992, installed it in 1995, and it's built on language on COBOL that basically we can't find people anymore who know it or who can do it. And so we're increasingly at risk as the system starts to have some trouble of finding people who can even fix it. Even, I think, of equal concern, as agencies upgrade their own systems that interface with MAPS, it becomes increasingly hard to have those newer systems connect with our old system, and we're, at times, we fear holding back the progress that people, or the benefit that people could get from their newer systems because they have this creaky old thing in the middle. You also have a handout, I think, in your packets that is just a one-pager on the MAPS project. Hopefully that can answer any other questions you have. On page 8, the key risks with the current MAPS, again, we've talked about these before, but there are risks related to the mainframe. As the mainframe gets up its annual upgrade, we're increasingly concerned that at one of these points in time, MAPS will fail and will not be able to do that upgrade. We're looking at mitigation strategies. We have those in place. We've worked out if something happens, what might we do to respond, but should that happen and we have to respond, it's both costly and disruptive and certainly means that we're putting money into a system that we know we need to replace. Desktop and staffing risks. I've already talked about staffing. Desktop, again, as one of the scenarios that we're looking at is MAPS at this point in time, as other agencies have operating systems that are much newer, some of our staff need to maintain two PCs on their desks to be able to have MAPS up running on our older system. And, for example, the Winona campus at Minsky. Some of those users are moving to Vista 64. MAPS doesn't operate on that, so again, people in that agency, and we expect this to be seeing this more and more, will have to maintain two PCs on their desks or switch basically between operating systems, which is really almost impossible to do in any productive way. Again, not an ideal way for us to work in state government. We've been looking at the costs of risk mitigation. We estimate that through fiscal 2011, the mitigation costs could be as much as $8.5 million. We think then the $18 million request that we have in front of you is a pretty good deal. I think you're going to be hearing more from the budget division about actually the lease purchase financing that takes that cost down to $17 or $18 million. But again, we're concerned not just from a financial standpoint, but also just from the need to get payments out to medical recipients, payments out to local governments, to schools, all of those things that you all expect as a way of having the work that you do transpire. We're increasingly concerned that we're just not going to be able to do it.
Well, yeah, Commissioner, this budget division, in fact, you know, has been quite supportive of doing something in MAPS. But for the last 2 years, anyway, the governor's office has not, and you know that we've had the patchwork proposals. And I think it needs to. I know it needs to be done. The lease purchase issue is still something I think we have to discuss and go through because it. It does get the system up and going, but you know it is more expensive in the long run to do it. Of course, we have the budget deficit going on, but we wouldn't have had that problem if we would have done it in the past 2 years. So, I think that we have to discuss that. Can you just briefly discuss the implications of not doing MAPS? You know, I mean, just patching up as we've been doing the last few years, and just. You're not getting the system up and going this time around. Where are we at?
Mr. Chair, I think that one of our several concerns with that scenario, first of all, it doesn't get any cheaper if we wait. And so to the extent that we put it off another couple years, we need to recognize the fact that it will cost more when we get around to doing it. We also know that it's a two-year project, and that's, again, why we felt like and the governor decided at our urging that even in this environment, as difficult as it is, we are really at a place where we cannot wait any longer. We feel in the last couple budgets obviously have brought the project forward, and the governor's eventual decision was not to put it in the budget at that point in time, believing that we could squeeze a couple more years out of it. At this point in time, given the increasing places where we see the system lock up on users and also, again, the difficulty that agencies are having with their own interactions and interface with the system, that we really couldn't wait any longer. We also felt like as we started to continue to explore different financing options, that lease purchase really got the system cost down to as cheaply as we possibly can do it. And so, again, we know that $18 million is still tough for you to do in this environment. And, again, we recognize, too, that it is more expensive in the long run than it would be if you did it all at once. We don't see doing it all at once as a likely scenario. And so that is why in an environment, again, where it's a lot of other really difficult decisions, and also we're a bunch of people that feel pretty comfortable usually trying to look at the cheapest way to do something, but we feel like the risk that we take on in waiting two more years just isn't acceptable, and that's why you have the proposal in front of you.
When the cost has gone up, as I recall, 2 years ago it was about $50 million, now it's almost $70 million.
So we'll see. Mr. Chair, I think we were somewhere around 55, so you've certainly seen an increase. Yeah.
But it's gone up, yeah. So we'll see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Andrews, on the overall budget cost slide, you know, I guess I'm kind of stricken that, you know, I keep hearing about all this old hardware and all this stuff. The hardware cost is, you know, a small percentage of the cost of this thing. It just blows me away that the services for consultants is $44 million. Is this kind of is going to be a first-class system, or is there, I guess, I'm looking at, you know, we could upgrade all the hardware and software, but I suppose it's designing the program to operate it, but that still seems like an awful lot of money.
Commissioner Andrews.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, it does seem like a lot of money. It's still less than many states. I think we've actually showed you some of the costs that other states have as they're looking at those projects. The hardware basically is the starting point, and then there's a lot of work to configure that and to make sure that it fits our processes. We have made the decision early on, and this is part of what keeps the cost down, even though, again, it's a relatively big price tag, but small compared to what some other states have done. We made the decision up front to look at a commercially available off-the-shelf product and to try to, as we go forward here with our procurement process, to be as close to that off-the-shelf as we can be, to modify it as little as we can. It was part in our existing system, in the MAP system that we currently have, part of what makes it really difficult to upgrade and to deal with. There are so many custom interfaces, both with the accounting and procurement systems that make up the whole system, but there are so many modifications to it that it's expensive to maintain. We're really trying to avoid that this time around and go with as much of an off-the-shelf product as we can. We think we can still get a good product, but it is expensive. We're also trying, as you look at the project costs there and the personnel, both services from consultants and personnel for state employees, to balance the need to bring people in to do the project, to not staff up in any permanent way that we don't need to, but to bring in, to have enough interaction between our state employees and our state team and the consultants so that there'll be knowledge transfer so that at the end of the project, the people that are left will be able to maintain the system.
Just a quick follow-up.
Cheryl Sheen.
Do you think that this could hold together till Senator Rest's bill about constitutional amendment to be able to bond for IT would hold up? Because I'm just, if that $17 million goes for 10 years, we're paying twice of this. You know, I don't know if that decreases over the lease, the life of the lease, but, you know, if we had that ability to bond for IT, that would put us in a much better position. And hopefully it's coming.
Well, of course, if it were to go on the ballot, the earliest would be November 2010. It's got to be in a general election year, so I think that answers the question. So,
yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Alcyon, we don't believe that we can wait.
Yeah. Commissioner, I've got a question or two now. I'm looking at the budget books, and when I look under the MMB's section, and I'm looking at page 6, members, it's got the agency overview. When we're looking at statutory appropriations, I don't know if you've got those sections here before you, Commissioner, but statutory overview, so it says general for 08 and 09 is 207, and then it jumps up to 9,182. I'm assuming that's the MAPS appropriation because it goes from almost nothing to a high number. And when you're looking down at full-time equivalents, 08 is 272, 09 is 274, and then it jumps up to 338 and 333. So is that all MAPS related as well, too, for full-time equivalents?
Mr. Chair, the increase in the dollars in is, as you say, that's the MAPS proposal. On the FTE, that's the MAPS staffing and also the internal control initiative.
Okay. Because now, if you'll jump ahead to page 19, I'm looking, again, the full-time equivalents goes from, and this is for accounting services. It goes to from 51 in 08 to 52 in 09 and then jumps up to 121 in 2010 and 119. So that's also tied into the MAPS?
And the internal control initiative,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
Now, but then I look back on page 10. This is MAPS replacement. And there's sort of a chart at the bottom there, and it says funding distribution. And it shows for personnel $5 million in 2010, $5 million in 2011, but zero in the out years. Likewise, the same thing for the hardware, the software, the facilities. The services does have a number for 2012, but nothing after that. I'm just wondering now, you know, if we make the commitment to MAPS and we have to have the additional funding and the additional people, are we accounting for what's going to happen down the road? Because this chart doesn't seem to show much happening in 2012 and further on.
Mr. Chair, if you were to see the 2012 and 13 numbers for accounting services back on page 19, those you don't see them because we don't have them here in the budget book. But basically, the people that we're bringing on for the MAPS project are for the project. And so once that project is done, those numbers would go back down, again, except for the internal control staff, which are permanent. So in terms of the project itself, it is largely a two-year, one-time project. as reflected on that change item page.
But will there be ongoing cost? I mean, we'll have if we go to the lease purchase option, we'll still have to be paying for the thing for 10 years, but it seems to me that there's going to be ongoing costs in running the system once we have it up. Commissioner Mo.
Mr. Chairman, certainly there will be ongoing operating costs to both in staffing and technical processing and storage costs to operate the system. But we have the cost of operating the current MAP system in our budget today. And while we expect that due to the increased complexity of a new system, there will be some increased staffing requirements, we also expect that we'll be moving to a platform with lower operating costs, similar to the platform change I talked about for the Semaphore system earlier. And our estimates for 2012 and beyond are that those two components would be offsetting, and so that the operating costs would be similar to what we have for MAPS today. So the funding that's requested is only for the two-year project period, where we have the cost of the project implementation in addition to running the existing MAPS for our production activities.
So is the agency going to have to hire 60 people or so for the 2 years and then not need them after the next 2 years? I'm trying to figure out where these people are going to go.
Mr. Chairman, that's right. We estimate 65 state staff for the project team in addition to the contractor team for the two-year duration. Some of those will be existing MMB staff that will be moved into project positions, and then we will fill behind them with temporary hires. Others will, and many of them we expect will come from state agencies who will similarly need to fill behind those folks. And then the project team at the conclusion of the project will either be on classified positions that are ending, or they will be people that will return to their home agencies and take that knowledge of the new system operation back to their home agencies to assist with the deployment of the new system.
So when we go across all of state government, at some point we're going to get an influx of about 60 employees into your agency for the purpose of MAPS for 2 years, and at some point 60 people somewhere across the board are going to be out. Is that how it's going to work? If they go, but if we have people from other agencies coming in and then going back to their home agencies, yeah, there's going to be some people out at some point.
Yes, Mr.
Chair. Okay.
And Mr. Chair, okay. If I could, this is very similar to what happened in the mid-90s when we had the statewide systems project, again, where we moved people in from other agencies to help out. Agencies often find that even though it's a temporary strain on their own operations and they either need to fill behind or make do without that person, the benefit of having that person work on the project so that when the new system is up and running, they know how to use it and they're able to take that knowledge back, it works out for them. And so this isn't a model that we haven't done before. We've also, on the project team for MAPS, include a number, 130-some people across state government, so that people, again, are already thinking about how they would accommodate that should we get to that, when we get to that point.
Well, that does raise a bit of a question in my mind, because, I mean, I only see the agencies which are within the purview of this budget division, and I don't know the other ones, but other agencies do appear to be having to cut some positions in order to accommodate, you know, for the governor's proposal for a 5% cut. And, you know, I'm just wondering aloud if some of them are anticipating that some of those positions are going to be lost because they're going to go into, you know, work on the MAPS project for 2 years and then come back, and that may not be reflected in the budgets. We're just seeing the cuts, and I don't know, and I'm just wondering now, are those permanent cuts that we're seeing, or are those just shifting people around, and this is where they're going to be housed for a little while? I don't know.
Mr. Chair, I think if the agencies are making those cuts, those certainly are permanent cuts to their budget. It doesn't mean that the people displaced may not find a home in this project if it's to be funded. But I think that's a different issue, and again, would depend on whether or not funding is appropriated for this project.
Sure. Any questions? Okay. Commissioner Andrews, anything further that you want to bring to our attention on... Senator Ruff will have some questions here, too. Actually, we've got a separate book for you, so.
I noticed that. Appreciate it.
Your book was getting too thick.
Commissioner, you know, I've been asking about the OLA audits of the state agencies, and the most recent one for them, the Department of Finance, was for fiscal year 2005, dated March 16, 2006, and there were several findings, and I wonder if you have that audit and if you'd care to respond to whether the recommendations have been implemented.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Moe is trying to see if she has that
she's
one with
coming,
her.
She's coming back.
As you know, Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, we are involved in our statewide capacity and our department capacity in a number of audits, and so we grabbed as many as we could here. Want to be sure that we're talking about the right one.
For the operation of your own agency, and the I guess there were three key findings that followed actually an unqualified audit opinion, too. One of which involved audit adjustments to the financial statements, and that there were, because there were numerous adjustments, that was indicating some weaknesses in the state's financial reporting process, which department needed to resolve. And then secondly, departments of transportation and finance didn't account for properly for reimbursements of construction project costs received from local units of government, and that particular error resulted in a prior period adjustment of $37.8 million and an additional adjustment of $24.5 million to that year's financial statements. And then a finding that I know it was resolved, at least by the letter to the Legislative Audit Commission, that you gave, Department of Finance gave seven employees broad clearances to the state's main accounting system, and that that level of clearance resulted in incompatible access to the accounting system without any mitigating controls. And the audit response letter did say that that eliminating the incompatible functions was preferable to implementing mitigating controls. And so the system access to process payments was removed for those seven employees, and that was completed by the date of the letter back to the Legislative Audit Commission. But the other two findings were to be implemented by October 31st of 2006, and I wonder if that happened.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, I'll address first the finding you referred to related to our financial reporting processes and the audit adjustments that were identified by the legislative auditor. We have a more recent report now on February 13th of 2009. The auditors issued their most recent report
on the financial statements.
On the financial statements, and there were no repeat findings on those. We have made significant improvements in many of our financial reporting processes. We had a period of time where we had experienced considerable turnover in that area. We have that area fully staffed now. We've made a number of changes. Additionally, we have done considerable work with the Department of Transportation to address the issues that you raised.
With regard to the local units of government issue or just the financial reporting?
Regarding the financial reporting, I'm not sure which local units of government issue you're referring to.
Let's see, I'm trying to turn aware of that. The finding, it was with the Department of Transportation, for reimbursements for construction project costs received from local units of government, which caused an error.
Mr. Chairman, Senator
That's
Rest.
That's a bit different than just the financial statements report.
Yes.
It's specific to those shared costs, I guess.
It was specifically related to tracking of those projects, and that has been addressed as well.
That has been resolved as well?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions of this agency? Minnesota Management Budget / Department of Finance. Okay, well, thank you very much, and we'll get that name figured out one of these days. Okay. Members?
I figured out how to do it. You know, it's
how
like
did you do
the
it?
OMB.
Formerly known as, okay.
And then there's the MMB. So
right.
It's kind of like federal is OMB, and Minnesota is Minnesota MB.
Well, and the agency has its timeline for changing its name, and the legislature has its timeline for changing its name, so we'll just have to coordinate those. So.
And I used to try and remember when we had the Department of Education kind of under Governor Carlson called Children, Families, and Learning. I just did CFL as like the Canadian Football
League. Football League,
and,
yes.
That's how
of
I
course.
Remembered that one.
Their agencies are trying to be somewhat like Prince, the agency
formerly
known
as. That's right. Yeah. You catch on.
It's a Minnesota thing. All right, I get it now.
We have on our agenda today the bill that we were going to start talking about last Monday, Senate File 1395. This is the governor's state government budget proposal. As you can see in the upper left-hand corner of the bill, first of all, it was drafted on, released by the revisers off on March 4th. I introduced it on behalf, as a courtesy of the governor's office. The bill, as you can see, was sent to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. And the reason why it was sent to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, because if you look at the title on page 1, one of the things that this bill does is it transfers the Environmental Quality Board to the Pollution Control Agency. So they felt that they wanted to see the bill. Well, so the bill is technically over there, not within the Finance Committee, which would leave it within this budget division. We don't need to have the bill formally in the Finance Committee for us to look at the bill to talk about it. We can't vote on anything because the bill is not properly in the Finance Committee. But what typically is done anyway is that we'll be preparing our own division bill, which will be adopted in the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee will ultimately have the final review of the bill, and whatever bill is to be introduced will be introduced by the Finance Committee. So this is our the starting point. Senator Rest. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Isn't it in case, and maybe there is this fiscal connection, but that transferring EQB to the PCA is indeed a policy suggestion, and it shouldn't have been in a finance bill to start with? I mean, haven't we in the past, or at least last year in particular, with, I believe, the governor's consent, if not urging, stripped out policy issues from finance bills? And if that's the case, it seems a little bit curious that that was not a separate bill.
Well, I can't explain it again. Maybe the witnesses from the administration can. I introduced it exactly as it was prepared by the administration. This is what they prepared. And there are issues in here that I think, you know, we need to know and understand what the administration is requesting and proposing. I'm already having some people that, you know, some people around the building here who want to be heard on this. And so I think what we'll do is at some point we will set aside a budget division hearing for people who want to respond to the governor's proposals. But first we have to know what those proposals are. And I don't know if we'll finish it today, but we'll certainly get started to find out what these proposals are. So welcome back.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I just wanted to just sort of hand it off. I appreciate your sponsoring the bill and just continuing to look at the provisions of the governor's budget recommendations. With me on my right is Angela Vogt, and on my left, Abigail Reed, who will be are the executive budget officers for the state government area and can capably handle a lot of the questions I think that you were raising prior to this committee hearing related to elements of the state government bill. I just wanted to add one other thing is that with the governor's supplemental budget, he will be supplying some additional language to make sure that that bill is in tune with his updated recommendations, and we'll be providing that shortly to you.
Sure, and we understand, appreciate that. I think we need to start knowing just what he's proposing here so we can work off of that. I think we had a summary sheet, members, that was given to you that kind of overall described the bill, right? And so, Ms. Reed or Ms. Vogt, did you want to start telling us what the bill says and does?
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Abigail Reed. I'm an executive budget officer at the Department of Finance. Okay. And what you have before you is a one-sheet front and back that walks through very basically how this bill implements the governor's budget for the agencies within the state government area. And so what Ms. Vogt and I are prepared to do is just walk through that and explain how each element does actually implement part of the governor's bill. At your request, I know there are agencies here that are actually affected by the provisions, right. So if you have more in-depth questions, we'll refer those to the agencies that are here, but we'll start the walkthrough at least to get us moving. So the sheet starts with Article 1. This is the article that implements the appropriations that are in the governor's budget. And in the interest of time, I think I'll just hit the ones that are bolded. But if you do have, see in the italicized area, items that you would like further discussion on, we can certainly do that. The bolded items, the first sections are 3 through 7. They implement the governor's recommended appropriations for the constitutional officers and for the legislature. And you'll see that the legislature is not broken down into levels of detail per division. This is consistent with the governor's recommendation of a full total appropriation amount for the legislature and not making any recommendation about how the body would determine how that is divided up.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, Senator Rush.
Would you indicate, this is very hard for me to read. Would you indicate how much of a cut that each one of those are represent for the legislature and the governor, et cetera?
The legislature has two reduction items. One is the 5% general reduction, and then the other is that smaller in lieu of rent offset. I believe that brings the total to 5.6% reduction.
5.6?
Yep, for the legislature.
Thank you. And what for the others? What's the percentage cut for the others?
Mr. Chair, members, my name's Angela Vogt. For the record, from the Department of Finance, the governor's budget reflects a 5% reduction from their operating budget, in addition also to a reduction, small reduction for the in lieu of rent offset. I'm sorry, ma'am?
In lieu of rent offset, we had a discussion on before. Could we have somebody come back and just kind of remind us what the in lieu of rent referred to? I think somebody from admin, you know, was here before to explain that.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I can see briefly about that change
sure.
item.
Just explain the concept. I think that's what we need to have done. So, yeah, go ahead.
Basically, what that item is a change item to increase per year the in lieu of rent appropriated to the Department of Administration for plant management purposes for the spaces like the Capitol building, the state's office building, where the entities occupying that space do not pay a lease rate as other agencies do. This is to accommodate for increases in the last, I think, about 6 years for depreciation costs, bond interest costs, maintenance, and salaries related to the work that goes on in that area. The allocation, the offset piece that goes to the legislature, the governor's office, and I think the Historical Society is, in fact, to make sure there's a revenue or a cost-neutral effect on the general fund. So it increases per year $500,000 to the Department of Administration and decreases the budgets of those other agencies.
Do we have somebody from finance? Was somebody here from finance to talk about that as well, too? Sir? Or, I mean, admin, I'm sorry. Is there somebody here? Yeah. Please identify yourself for the record. Yeah.
Ms. Chair and members, Nikki Giancola, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Administration.
Again, could you just talk briefly about the in lieu of rent offset proposal from the governor's office? Some background and just what it means and why we're doing it. So.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, Angela pretty well covered it. it's analogous to the lease charges that that government units such as state agencies pay for space in the buildings that are under the custodial control of administration. They're based on our cost for maintaining the space, and as she mentioned, the costs include employee compensation, utilities, supplies, repairs and maintenance, depreciation, and bond interest. It's been unchanged since 2004. The request is seeking a 6.3% increase, and for comparison and to balance that out, our electricity is up by 30%, natural gas is up by 172%, district energy is up by 86%, and state employee salary and benefits are up by 11%. What this is doing is simply catching us up to the cost that it takes us to manage the space, and again, it's analogous to the space charges that other state agencies pay for their space. And I believe that the governor's recommendation is simply to make sure that those are offset to the appropriate entities.
Just put in simpler terms, agencies pay rent. The legislature and the governor's office, the constitution, we don't, but we provide funds for administration for our share of the upkeep, and we've fallen behind in that share. Is that a simple way of saying it?
Mr. Chair, essentially that's it.
That's
yes.
It. Okay, so rest.
Why?
Why have we fallen behind?
Why is this the first time in 5 years that there's been a request for an increase? I mean, why haven't we been doing our fair share? And the governor's office.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rust, we have done a number of things to try to keep those costs down. We've had a 15% reduction in our staffing while we're also increasing our work productivity. Our work productivity is up, and we've got statistics that we can provide to you on that point. We've worked very, very hard to reduce our non-FMLA lost time with our staff, and so we've been able to absorb a lot of that in productivity and just having people present to do work. We've worked, again, very hard on reducing the amount of energy. The Department of Administration has been very diligent in trying to meet the governor's executive order, trying to reduce by 10% energy consumption, so that equates to cost. I guess what I'm saying
is... I'm not talking about the wonderful work you've done. Why haven't you charged us
more money?
Why is this the first time since, I think you said, 2004?
2004.
We should be paying our fair share for the last 5 years. Why, those costs have been going up, why did you eat them?
Ms. Giancola or somebody?
I just don't understand that.
Mr. Chair, Senator, it's related to the fact that this is a direct appropriation, so it's a different funding mechanism that funds the leases for these entities versus how state agencies are billed. So it has to be readjusted periodically.
Mr. Chairman, why are you recommending this change now? I'm just trying to understand the mechanism, and it just sounds like we haven't been
as opposed to paying. 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. As opposed to 2 years ago. Just curious.
Yeah. Anybody? Okay, we don't know.
Okay. You don't know.
We don't know. Okay. All right.
Sorry.
That's fine. Okay. Well, I guess we were talking about the constitutional officers. Anything further?
Mr. Chair, I believe the original question was to describe a little bit about the reductions to the
right.
Constitutional officers.
It's 5% in every area. Is that correct? And then you also mentioned the in lieu of rent allocation, which is a separate funding to pay for our share of the building, right?
That's correct.
Gotcha. Okay. So the rest.
On to state agencies now?
I think we just finished the constitutional officers. Is that correct? Next one up is what? What's next?
The bolded parts,
yeah.
Mr. Chair, the next sections 8 through 17 and 25 through 29, implement the governor's recommended appropriation levels for state agencies. And the next italicized sections highlight some of the riders that are included in there. We can walk through them if you'd like, or we can just respond to questions if you have.
Yeah, give us a second to read through it while Senator Rust has a question here.
I just wanted you to be aware that in, Senate File 80, we're asking the Campaign Finance Board to do a feasibility study to let us know by next year the possibilities of beginning to fund that agency through the checkoff dollars so that the campaign finance system operates independently of a general fund appropriation. The checkoff dollars would go first to is what at least what I'm thinking of, and they're going to look into that, would go first to funding that agency, although, of course, it would have to be approved here. But the source of the dollars would be like almost like a special revenue fund. And the in my thought in that is that the candidates' campaigns, the political parties benefit from a highly organized oversight board like the Campaign Finance Board, and we ought to be paying for it through the dollars that are raised by the voluntary checkoff. So just to let you know that we are looking at that, it's not the biggest item in your thing, but it seems to me that has the possibility of being a self-contained item that would free up some general fund money that otherwise is shipped out to the candidates for the public finance. So just to alert you to that.
One question I've got is that, again, for this overall the state agencies, it's noted here that there's increased funding for the SMART program. Are there any other increases within this particular area? Most of these are just, again, the 5% reductions that the governor's proposed, but are there any other increases besides SMART?
Mr. Chair, members, the italicized numbers there, like Section 10, Section 12, Section 14, these are highlighting the increases. Okay. So what you'll find in the bill is actually that the reductions are just reflected in the total appropriation levels for an agency. You won't see those ridered except in cases where there's a specific place we need to indicate it's taken from. Okay. But what you will see in these riders are indicating where there are increases. So examples are the data center consolidation initiative in Section 10, and a number of them in Section 12, and then the financial oversight initiative for MMB in Section 14. And also, and it's not shown here, but reflected in the appropriation level for amateur sports, there was a small increase to their appropriation as well.
Okay. Any questions on these sections for the state agencies? Okay, why don't you proceed? I guess Section 18 is the lottery.
Section 18, unlike the other appropriations above it, this isn't a direct appropriation. Actually, what's been done by convention in the bill is to establish an operating budget spending limit for the lottery. So what this does is just take the amount they've projected for their operating budget in the November forecast and listed it as a cap on their operating budget. And sections 19 through 24 and 30 just appropriate the November forecast base amounts for the tort claims, contingent funds, and pension funds that are carried in this bill area.
And these are the ones we do every year. So the governor's not proposing to change that. He's just continuing on the appropriations we do for every. Okay.
Exactly, Mr. Chair. These are the November forecast base levels just carried in the bill.
Okay.
Section 31 implements the governor's budget reserve recommendation. That was to add the $250 million to the budget reserve. As you know, it was depleted during this biennium, so this would add a portion back.
I don't recall if you made a recommendation yesterday on this area or not, and this may be part of the supplemental budget that he's coming forward. And did he say anything yesterday in his proposal about the size that he wants to make the budget reserve?
I believe that initiative has stayed the same, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so at the moment it's still put $250 in the budget reserves. Okay.
And as Mr. Showalter said, further detail on those will be available hopefully on our website actually right
okay.
now.
Okay. Okay. We'll look forward to getting further information. Okay.
And as Mr. Showalter said, any changes that are required to this bill, we will provide in amendment form as quickly as possible so that you can take them up.
Thank you.
Section 32, then, is actually language that has already passed, so would no longer be needed, so we can pull that out. But it was the language needed so that stimulus funds received in 2009 would carry forward and not be allocated by statute to the budget reserve, but rather be available for spending in the next biennium.
Okay.
Turning to the second page, moving to Article 2, this is the article that actually provides some of the operating language necessary to implement these initiatives. And the first segment of this is actually in Sections 1 through 2, Section 10, and then Section 16. And together, these implement the MAPS and integrated tax lease purchase proposals. And I'll walk through that a little bit just to make sure it's clear. Section 1 actually establishes a permanent statutory framework for using lease purchase financing for IT. So as we discussed last week, while we've used lease purchase financing for other kinds of projects in the state, we have not used it specifically for IT systems projects. And so what this does is proposes permanent statutory framework within which that would operate. So this would go into statute and it would stay there, and we would activate it from time to time if we wanted to use lease purchase financing for a particular project. And what that Section 1 really aims to do is to provide a framework around it. As Mr. Showalter and others testified last week, it's really important that we use this for core systems projects, for the kinds of things that it makes sense to spread the cost over 10 years or even 5 years for. So what this does is really try to put that framework around it. And what Sections 2 and 10 do then is actually provide the standing appropriations necessary for these specific projects. So if you recall, the MAPS initiative would require the 17.85, I believe, million for the biennium to make the lease payments. That is the appropriation here, 8.975 million per year that would be required for that project. Section 10 provides the 2.117 million per year appropriation that would be required for the integrated tax.
Page 13, subdivision 9, tax exemption, sales tax exemption.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I can't hear the question.
Sub 9 on page 13, sales tax exemption. What is the cost of that, writing a sales tax exemption? What do you anticipate being the cost of that based on what your total appropriation would be to for vendors?
Ms. Reed, is there a fiscal note yet on the on that tax
or
exemption?
Revenue estimate.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, in general, the framework here you'll see is actually quite similar to statutes we already have on the books for general obligation bonding. In cases where the tool is similar, we've carried through similar language. I'm going to have to actually turn to Assistant Commissioner.
I want to know the estimate of the cost.
Sure. Is there somebody here who can tell us what the cost might be for the tax exemption?
You know, we don't actually have that information with us, Mr. Chair. We'll look into it, and we will get back to you on that item.
It should be part of the consideration of doing that, even if they're taking boilerplate language from bonding.
Right. Yeah. The if there's a cost to it, ultimately that'd have to be factored in. You know,
if you forego the sales tax on $60 million worth of purchases.
We'd have to know all the costs, even the tax related costs, because ultimately the tax committee would be very interested in knowing if they're going to have, you know, tax exemptions in there. But at some point, we'd have to be aware of what they are.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, because this is handled the same way, proposed to be handled the same way as geobonding, we'll try to find out how we would track that in geobonding cases if we do it all and provide that information to you.
Well, anytime there's a tax exemption, something's generated to the tax committee.
Expenditure.
Yeah, it's a cost somewhere. Now, the tax committee tracks it more than the finance side, but it's a cost to government somewhere, and we have to know what that is. Okay, please proceed.
So, Mr. Chair, members, as I was walking through, remember there was Section 1 was the permanent statutory framework. 2 and 10 were the appropriations necessary for the specific project. Project Section 16 actually then authorizes the projects for lease purchase financing. So this is sort of akin to what you see in the bonding bill. We have the bonding bill to authorize the agency to go out and sell bonds of a certain amount. This Section 16 authorizes our agency to go out and enter into lease purchase agreements for these specific projects in the amounts given.
Now, on the next section, Section 3, I was told that the individual who is up, the witness for tax appropriation bond initiatives is
out ill or something like that is not available. Is that still the case, sir?
Mr. Chair, she is actually with us today, Assistant Commissioner Cardell, and is prepared to answer any questions.
Oh, good. Well, I guess we'd like to have a little bit more of information on it. I mean, I've heard about it, read about it. I've not had a chance to really review the language, so I think we would like to have a in-depth description of what the governor's proposal on the Tobacco Appropriation Bonds Initiative is. So, Commissioner Cardell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, for the record, I'm Kathy Cardell, Assistant Commissioner. And it's very important to note that we don't call these tobacco appropriation bonds in the statute. They're actually state appropriation bonds.
I'm reading what your summary is from MMB, sorry.
It says tobacco.
I understand that, and I'm looking at the legislation itself.
Okay, sure.
In Section 3, as you've noted, the Subdivision 1 defines certain terms that are used in the authorizing legislation. The authority is described in Subdivision 2, and I just wanted to talk a little bit briefly about you can read what the language is in Subdivision 2, but I wanted to just talk a little bit independently of a bill, what the legal authority is for this. This is an appropriation-backed credit. It is not a general obligation bond issue, which carries the full faith, credit, and taxing power of the state. The Constitution says that obligations payable from taxes are public debt, but appropriation-backed issues are not long-term obligations. They are payable in each fiscal period as current expenses. And you can see that in this language as well as the language that was related to the technology financing, which is that the payment of the obligations are subject to appropriation in each fiscal period. There is a legal opinion that I believe that you have copies of that was prepared by Dorsey and Whitney, the state's General Obligation Bond Council, which was done at the request of the House Finance and Ways and Means Committee. I think that the legal opinion does a better job than I, and I will say I'm not an attorney. I'm not able to address questions with respect to the tax issues surrounding this, but the legal opinion was fairly straightforward.
And this is the letter from Leonard Rice.
That's correct.
To yourself, dated February 3rd, 2009.
That's correct.
That's what you're referring to. Okay,
that's
we have
correct.
A copy of that. Okay.
Yep. Yes. And you know, I'll just make one other comment. I know that in the discussion of this particular proposal, there have been statements made by some that would indicate that this is some sort of a new type of financing structure that the state has never undertaken before. And quite frankly, that is not the case. We have many, many examples of appropriation-backed bonds already outstanding. The lease purchase financings that we did for the buildings for the DHS and also Ag and Health are both subject to appropriation. Even though they were issued by the Port Authority, the credit for those bond issues is the state's credit because we are obligated to make lease purchases subject to your appropriation on those bond issues. Furthermore, the legislature has approved and the governor has signed bills that create standing appropriations for out of the general fund for bonds that have been issued by others, such as the TCF Bank Stadium for the University of Minnesota. So I think it's important that the committee understand that while this may not have been described in quite the same way, that this is a structure that is quite commonplace, that we've used it before, and it's not quite as newfangled as some might have us think. The authority section. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Go ahead.
That may well be, but have we ever, or when have we used it to, fund our obligation to fund public education or health care of some sort or transit operations? Or when have we done it for ongoing operations, general operations of state government, as opposed to you were listing project-specific things. And I mean, it's your summary that calls it tobacco bonds, not ours. And it's dated March 16, 2009. It's not dated February or any time like that. So you might want to look at this and give us an updated description. And what is another example of a stream of revenues that would be available to us to deal with appropriations bonds for general operations of state government? Where is there another bunch of money?
To balance the budget, basically, I guess. Okay. Yeah. Ms. Cardell.
Yep, sure. Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, you're absolutely right that this has not been used in the way that you are describing, except that what you need to understand is that the proceeds of these bonds are being used for, or proposed at least, to be used for a tax-exempt capital-related purpose, which is to basically refinance the outstanding debt service obligations of the state during fiscal years 2010 and 11, thereby releasing the general fund monies that otherwise would have been used for that purpose for other purposes as you all see fit.
Mr. Chairman, and you know that, and that's what causes some to call it a Ponzi scheme. You understand that? I mean, not to be insulting, but that is, to me it fits the description, and I'm very, very leery of doing that. Who knows? We may be forced to do it, but. Wow, I wouldn't want to do that on any kind of routine basis. It's just the way to go when we need a bunch of money. But there you go.
I don't know if it's a Ponzi scheme. It sounds more like the payday.
Well, a payday
thing. Well, you're cashing your paycheck ahead of time, but you're going to have to pay greater costs for it later ahead. So, which is a different issue. But go ahead.
I understand.
Anything else, Senator Rust?
Chairman, yeah. I'd like to ask another question about where is it? Section 11.
Okay, we haven't quite got there yet. But, we're at Section 3 right now, so. Okay.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah. Any questions on the appropriation bonds initiative?
I would just say, Mr. Chairman, it caps the maximum amount of bonds that can be issued. It caps the term of the obligations so that it cannot exceed 20 years. It allows us to refinance bonds if it's cost-effective to do so. Jumping ahead, the important section in terms of this not being a public debt is in Subdivision 6, which clarifies that there is no full faith and credit pledge. The state is not required to make appropriations. That's a very important section. And then Subdivision 7 and 8 appropriate the proceeds and make the appropriation for debt service.
Okay. Senator Roble.
So if we're not required to make the appropriations, why would anybody loan us the money?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, that's a very, very good question. There are, in the public finance world, there are most states take advantage of appropriation credit. In fact, there are many states that cannot even do general obligation bond financing as we are able to do in this state. And so there has developed a market for appropriation-backed debt. In fact, Wisconsin is selling $1.5 billion this week. Essentially, however, and to really speak to your point, is that even though you as the legislature are not required to appropriate, the consequences of not appropriating are basically identical to what would happen if we fail to make a payment on our general obligation bonds. It is very significant consequence, both from the state's credit as well as from the market access for the state going forward for any bonding programs. So it's not something that people would want to do lightly, obviously, because this is a significant amount. But we have that very same risk on our appropriations for these various buildings that we've financed and other items.
Sarah Roblin.
Thank you. Remind me again how much of the tobacco settlement money that we annually receive would be going for this?
Cardell.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, it's less. It changes, of course, based on the interest rates, and interest rates are quite volatile currently. But right now, we're projecting it's about 42%, and the dollar amount is about 73 million or so in each. It goes up very slightly. It's structured to produce very slightly ascending debt service, simply because the tobacco receipts are also projected by Global Insight, who does those projections nationally, to be increasing very slightly. So it's about 73 million of about 200 million that we are currently receiving each year. So it's what is that, 40 some percent?
Thank you.
Now, as I recall, in 2005, when we had that partial government shutdown, one of the things that we did was we passed the health impact fee, which was raising the cigarette tax, and the tobacco companies, I think, said that we'd broken the deal, and as I recall, the court said no, that we had not. So, but now the federal government has just raised the price of cigarettes and so forth. So, has there been any analysis done as to possibly diminishing returns that we might get from the tobacco settlement if people, darn them, quit smoking because of the increasing costs?
Mr. Chairman, yes. In fact, Global Insight has done a new 2009 forecast, which, and I apologize, I don't have this memorized, but they projected actual declines in both fiscal year 2009, 10, and 11, I believe, in terms of consumption. Some significant percentages, the number that's coming to my mind is about 8%. So it's not an inconsequential number, and that has been factored in. But quite frankly, we're not. This proposal does not leverage those dollars very highly at all, certainly relative to most of the other states that have done something similar. But yes, we are aware of that, and we've looked at that in terms of the structure.
Okay. Now, the Attorney General's office also responded to a request by, I think, Senator Pogemiller on this, and I think they came back and said, the AG's office said they weren't quite sure about this. Is that, could you summarize what the Attorney General thought about the proposal?
Mr. Chairman, we've not been given a copy of that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions about the tobacco? No, I won't call it the tobacco, the appropriations bond.
It's okay, Mr. Chairman. I tease the commissioner all the time to tell him I need to fine him.
It's your summary, so, okay. Okay.
I know. I lost that battle. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you. Let's see. Ms. Reed, did you want to proceed with the rest of the bill here?
Mr. Chair and members, also, if you're looking for further detail on this initiative in the governor's budget, it's under the MMB non-operating section of the budget book, if that's been provided to you. That's where some of these sort of statewide, hard-to-categorize items end up in the budget. So moving through the summary, Section 4 of the Article 2 of the bill implements the e-licensing initiative. So what this does is set up the account where the funds would be collected. It also establishes the surcharge that would be collected on licenses and deposits in the account, and then explains how the contract authority would work to contract for the project. And also, I think it's at the request of some members, does make it clear what happens with unused funds in this account should there be any remaining dollars after the project has been completed, and then does set the expiration date for this entire section, because the idea is this is a temporary surcharge to fund the development phase of the project.
And are they seeking any additional funds to complete e-licensing, or is it just more the surcharge that does that?
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, Sections 5 through 9 talk about amendments to some existing laws related to grants policies. Section 11 talks about amending the existing law on cooperative purchasing to actually require cities, counties, and townships to participate in administration's current program related to the purchase of goods and services. That piece is in your budget book on page 19 and 20 if you want any more information about that.
We did talk previously. Senator Rist, is this a question? I thought you said Section 11. You had a question on that.
On Section 11, but they're not there yet. They just went 5 to 9.
Well, they just started Section 11, so, okay. Yeah.
Okay,
Senator Rist.
On the requiring the so-called cooperative purchasing rather than having it available, is that part of the governor's shared services initiative type thing, or is the out of that in the line 1928 to say wherever practicable and cost-effective, and so the local governments get the flexibility in not responding to that requirement by that language?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think if I understand your question, basically what this does is just requires those big cities, counties, and townships to participate unless it's practicable. I think it was always available to those entities and local governments if they wanted to be involved. This just puts a little more emphasis on the bigger entities being involved in it unless they have a reason to not be.
Well, but Mr. Chairman,
Senator Rust, yeah.
It doesn't say who gets to decide that. Seems like to me that that's language without any particular clout to it. If the local governments can say, well, that's not practicable or that's not cost effective, and I mean, who do they have to demonstrate that to if you're going to apply this mandate? I mean, we know that local governments can participate in the state's purchasing contracts. They already can do that. How does this language change the obligation of cities and local governments? And I would suggest it doesn't, but convince me that it does.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, my name is Kent Allen. I'm the Materials Management Division Director within the Department of Administration. The intent of the language is to really keep a good deal of the discretion and local purchasing decisions at the city, county, and township level. But it does add an obligation to first look at state contracts before going to other alternatives. If the local unit decides that there are alternatives that are more cost-effective or that the state contract isn't practicable, they have the ability to use those other alternatives. The impact of this language, if it passes, is that the Department of Administration will more proactively attempt to provide contracting services to local units of government. Right now, we provide contracts for state agencies. If they coincidentally help local units, those local units can use them in most cases. If this passed, we would actually focus on the needs of local units and develop some new contracts that attempted to meet their specific needs.
Okay, and we've only got a few minutes left. We've got a few more questions. Senator Rest,
question on that. So what's the fiscal impact of the Department of Administration undertaking this more aggressive program with regard to contracting and so forth with local governments, if that's the point of it? What does that cost the department to do?
Our Mr. Chair and Fairly. Senator Rest, our intention would be to spend an additional $550,000 annually in developing those contracts. But the important thing to point out is that that wouldn't involve an appropriation to our department. Our assumption is that we could raise the costs of managing the contracts through contract fees that would be paid by the vendors.
Sir Cooley?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that section seems to me, I mean, what do you do? You know, I represent seven entire counties, several of which are below 10,000 in population. You know, what if they only have one business in the county that handles a given piece of equipment, and they'd like to keep that business in the county. Are they allowed to purchase from that business, even though their cost may be higher? I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm not very comfortable with that kind of language. Who, and as Senator Ress said, who decides what's practicable?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the local unit would decide what's practicable. This isn't something that my department would police. The decision as to what's practicable and cost-effective stays at the local unit.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, it seems to me that, I mean, you know, the cost-effective part, I mean, it clearly could be less, but, you know, what's the cost of eliminating a business in a county that may only have one business that handles that kind of equipment?
Mr. Chair.
I don't know.
Sir Robley?
Well, I could see where a county might say it's cost-effective for us to keep that business here because without them, we lose our property tax base. So they could justify buying locally and consider that more cost-effective in the long run. I would think, it wouldn't be a big problem. I bet they could justify that.
Well, we're out of time, so I don't think we're going to finish the bill today, so we're going to have to just put it back on the agenda, review maybe some more issues here and the rest of the bill at some point. Let me just note on Article 3, I think that is an issue before the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. I'm not planning on going there to explain that proposal, so if some of the administration wants that done, I think they should coordinate with that committee so they can figure out what it is, but they've got the bill, so they have an interest in it. So there's another question. Commissioner Bajor, did you have something before we adjourn? I'm sorry. I saw you standing back there. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and members, I thought I would answer a question
Sure. So
that we don't leave it lingering. I believe Senator Rest asked, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, why we did not ask for interim increases in the in lieu of rent appropriation. Why now? 2004 was our last increase. And I think the answer is twofold. First of all, we would have had to have come in either the 06 or 08 biennium and requested that money. And a lot of the productivity initiatives that Ms. Giancola addressed were just kicking in. And, in fact, we were able to hold our costs relatively flat during that time period. And it's just as an example, rents on some of the buildings around the Capitol campus actually went down. On the Transportation Building, the Stassen Building, the History Center, Freeman, BCA and Anderson, rents were actually going down in that time frame. And we were under a great deal of pressure, obviously, to help agencies out and hold the rents as flat as we possibly could. You couple that with now 4 years or 6 years of pent-up demand and the kinds of escalation that Ms. Giancola described, it's really we can no longer continue to absorb those increases. But there really is a second reason, which is that for some time we've been anticipating a substantial capital renovation. And so some of the leasehold improvements that we might have made in the ceremonial grounds or in the Capitol itself, we've put on hold. And we really feel now, given the landscape, that we really do need to move ahead with some of those. So that's another reason for the increase.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful.
Anything else anybody needs to clarify before we adjourn? If not, we'll see you next week. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.